Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Renee Denfeld. Her new novel is The Enchanted. She joins us by telephone from somewhere out west. Where are you, Oregon?
I'm in Portland, Oregon.
Okay. I understand this is your first novel, but you've written some other books. Were those all nonfiction?
Yes, they were. Prior to becoming my current day job is actually as a death penalty investigator. But before getting into that field, I was a reporter and a journalist for many years, and I actually wrote a couple nonfiction books during that time.
How does a person become a death penalty investigator? Is there a particular school that you go to?
No, there's not. It's, it's absolutely fascinating work, and I had actually never heard of the field before I got into it, but I was actually, as a reporter, had met people in the course of reporting on a crime, actually had met several people that were doing this kind of work, and I became absolutely fascinated by it. Kind of in a nutshell, it's a licensed investigator who's hired by the attorneys who are representing men and women who are facing execution, and it's my job to conduct this thorough investigation into this person's life and basically find out why they are the way they are, why they did the things they did, if in fact they did them, just to essentially learn all about this person in the hopes that the attorneys can get information that may end up sparing their lives.
And by an amazing coincidence, one of the characters in your new book is a death penalty investigator.
Yeah, isn't that a funny coincidence? Absolutely, yeah. The character's just called the lady in the novel, and she does exactly what I do. She has my job, though we do have a lot in common. She is not me. She's very much her own person.
What made you decide to write this particular novel?
It's interesting because I frankly got into this field because I needed a day job. As you know, the field of journalism is not very easy anymore. And I was raising three kids I'd actually adopted from foster care and needed a job and was fascinated by this work and thought it would be just a wonderful experience to do. And I have been very happy with it. I absolutely love it. But at the same time, I'm bound by confidentiality. And so I always thought, well, I'm not going to be able to write a nonfiction book about this. It's just going to stay in this kind of magical place for me where I get to hear people's stories and really truly learn why crime and violence happens, which has been amazing. But then one day, actually, I can tell you a real quick little story. I was actually leaving the prison where they house the death row here in Oregon. It's this ancient kind of stone prison, if you can imagine, kind of high stained stone walls, big fortress. And I was leaving. I remember it was a very beautiful day. And I happened to turn back and look at the prison walls, and I heard this very quiet, distinctive voice. And the voice said, "This is an enchanted place." And I just very slowly began following that voice into this novel. I had no plans of writing a novel, no expectation, but I became absolutely entranced with this voice and this narrator and what he was telling me, and I just kind of followed him right into it.
Renee Denfeld joins us. Her new novel is The Enchanted, and this is an enchanted book as well. You just drew me right in, and this voice, this narrator, wow, he's got his own magical world, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does, and that's, you know, one thing that just intrigued me writing it, because it's a novel. It's set on a death row in this awful dungeon. It's probably the most grim and despairing place that someone can find themselves. And yet the narrator of this novel, who's in this death row, he's convinced that this is an enchanted place. And he sees the prison through the lens of, you know, someone who believes in these magical, fantastical visions. And so he believes he lives in an absolutely enchanting place, and the most enchanting things happen there. So a good part of the novel is actually, you know, this vision he has of this place and the beauty that he finds despite this awful situation he's in.
He's totally isolated. He has no contact, and he's being punished in the most extreme way, isn't he?
Yes. And that's something, you know, a lot of the novel, of course, is his vision of what his life is like. And, you know, there's some things I see in common with what I see doing my work and spending time in prisons and with death row clients. You know, and a lot of times, you know, they are often isolated. You know, it's common, for instance, that a person on death row isn't allowed to have visits that involve any touch. Or they might, you know, they're often locked up in their cell for 23 hours a day and are released into these little kind of cyclone dog runs for exercise. So, yes, it's definitely, I would say, not an easy way to live. And I think people kind of escape that reality through different ways. And this narrator happens to escape them into these beautiful stories, you imagine.
And this nameless death row prisoner is mute. He doesn't speak, yet he speaks to us, the readers, as the narrator. We get inside his head, and what we quickly discover is this is really a book about what it means to be a human.
Oh, yes, thank you. Absolutely. And, you know, it's also a book where, you know, the narrator's talking about the character of the lady, the investigator that comes to the row. There's a character called the Fallen Priest. There's a very human and sympathetic warden. And I think a lot of these people in the novel are each kind of in their own prison, whether it's a real prison, as in the men on the row, or a kind of a prison of their own making, and whether it's a prison made of shame or regrets or remorse. And they're all trying to kind of escape these prisons and find some sort of redemption. And so much of the story is the unfolding of that redemption and how these people all discover it in each other. And so I think it actually is a very uplifting story in many ways.
The book is The Enchanted. Renee Denfeld wrote it. She joins us on the program today. And lest you might think the lady is there trying to investigate the death sentence of our narrator, this is not the case. She's working on a case involving another prisoner, and this guy, like some that you hear about on death row, he doesn't want to be saved. He doesn't want a stay of execution. He wants to die.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it comes up often in the kind of work that I do. Sometimes a client will basically waive their appeals, and in our field we call it volunteers. They volunteer to be executed. And they tell their legal teams, I'm done. And it's occurred to me, I have never had a client that's done that. But I've often thought, how would I feel and what would I do if I did? What if I was working with someone and trying to uncover the truth of who they are and basically being hired by their attorneys in order to try to spare their life? And what if that person told me, no, you know, I want to be executed? Would wonder how I would handle it. And so part of the novel is the character of this lady wrestling with that as she has this man who is saying, go away, I'm ready to die. And how does she come to terms with that and try to respect and honor where he's coming from as well?
And as the lady investigates the circumstances of this condemned man's life and the crimes he committed and where he came from, this really resonated with me as a reader because I figured that there are a lot of situations like this where a person ends up being condemned to death that came from a really horrible background.
Absolutely. And, you know, we sometimes joke, there's not very many people that do my kind of work. And interestingly enough, for all these little women, for the most part, usually women who have had a lot of life experience in their 40s and 50s. And there's a bit of an ongoing joke that kind of the myth of what we call the Hannibal Lecter myth, that people think these people, men and women, are all these brilliant sociopaths. And we joke that if we ever get a brilliant sociopath, we're going to, you know, send out a memo to everyone. Because most of the cases I work, these are men and women who come from just the most horrific childhoods you can imagine, with just a lot of extreme abuse and neglect. And it's very sad. And, you know, it makes a lot of sense often when we start looking at their backgrounds of why they ended up being the way they are. But at the same time, the novel also explores, interestingly, the lady comes from a difficult background, and it's something, you know, I've dealt with in my own life. I had a tough childhood myself, and kind of wrestling with why is it some of us can survive a lot of hardship and grow into good people, and other people kind of succumb to it. And the novel explores that a little bit as well.
You alluded to the fact that you had adopted some children, and that certainly creates the impression that you have a yearning to nurture.
Yes, I do. Thank you. You know, as far as I know, I could have had kids the old-fashioned way. But it's funny. In my 20s, I wanted to have kids, and I knew that from my own background, there's a lot of kids in foster care in the United States. Something like 500,000. So, you know, it made sense to me to be a parent that way. And, you know, I have to say it's been hands down the best choice I've ever made. My kids are wonderful and have given me, I think, a lot more than I've given them. And, you know, I've just, as in the work, I get a lot of joy out of nurturing and trying to help and understand people. It really feels like an honor and a blessing to me to get to do these kind of things and to learn about people and kind of see and hear them for who they are and accept them and give them what they need.
Renee Denfeld is our guest. Her novel is The Enchanted. Our narrator has his own language, his own perception, and he's a lot like me in one way. He's a book lover.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny, writing the novel, I was so caught up in the narrator's voice, sometimes I would have these moments where I thought, oh, well, isn't that a coincidence? That's so much like me. With all the characters, there was something in each of them that was similar to me. And for me, that was my commonality with the narrator as well, is I grew up just loving books and stories. And from a young age, you know, books were kind of my escape. And my soulless, and that's absolutely for his case. The narrator is a man who's learned to read in prison. Like a lot of clients I've had, he went into prison illiterate, and then he learns to read in the prison library, and he finds this kind of magical world in books where he uses them to kind of escape off into fantasy. And I think it's an absolutely beautiful thing that he does, and it's how he's coping with his circumstances.
And when he did have access to the books in the prison library, he also was able to look at a window that gave him a view of the sky. And for those of us who have never been incarcerated, I'm assuming most of our listeners, it's hard to comprehend how important this was to him.
Yes, you know, and I've spent so much time in prisons and jails, I won't say become immune to it, but I've become so accustomed to that reality that I can forget sometimes that people aren't aware of just how grim and awful prisons can be, not just death rows, but regular prisons. And the book does touch upon some of the awful things, the corruption that can happen in those settings. But, yeah, for the narrator, you know, he's in this cell, and he has a little narrow kind of stone slot that he can look out and see the sky. And for some people in prison, that's a huge boon. That's a gift that not everyone gets. There are people that live in prisons that literally never see the outdoors.
We don't know our narrator's name. We don't know what crimes he committed. We assume if he's on death row, he probably did something very terrible. Yet, by the end of the book, there's a sense of liberation with this fellow. We do get some inklings of what he might have done. We do find out a little bit about who he was. And you're right. At the end, it's very uplifting, which was, I think, the amazing miracle of this story.
Oh, yeah, thank you. And he, you know, he kind of finds his own redemption, in a sense, that doesn't involves a lot of the traditional themes that people think of, you know, and it was very important to me writing this novel, and from my own work, I have to bear witness so often to the pain that people cause each other, and I didn't want in any way to minimize that. I wanted to kind of honor the truth of these, some of these crimes. I mean, they're just absolutely horrific. So I really kind of wanted to give a sense of the gravity of that and the awfulness of it. At the same time, I didn't want to be explicit. I think we have so much of that in our culture already, where people are just incredibly graphic about violence, yet at the same time, it's not really portrayed in a way where people are going to take it very seriously. And I kind of wanted to do absolutely the opposite and give people a real sense of the horror that this guy even feels, the horror he feels at himself, at what he did.
This character, prison chaplain, I guess you would call him, you refer to him as the fallen priest. He's an intriguing character. There's a lot of characters in here who have fallen. We've got the corrupt prison guard. We have the warden, who seems like a really nice guy, but his personal life is troubled. His wife is dying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the lady is kind of, she's as well as wrestling with her history and her sense of shame over the childhood that she had and coming kind of from very much the wrong side of the tracks, and her shame over she has a mother with these, I won't give it all away, but these significant challenges that she really wrestles with. I think they're all these people in one way or another are struggling, and some of them have given up. The corrupt guard, for instance, obviously is not trying to have a soul anymore, whereas other people in the story are very much trying to have a soul, despite sometimes having done terrible things and being deeply ashamed and confused by their own actions. A big part of this story is how about all these people are kind of struggling to be seen and heard by each other for who they really are. And there's a love story between the priest and the lady that really explores how they so desperately want to be seen and heard and accepted, and yet they struggle with these secrets and chains they have. And I think that's true for all of us. It's a very universal thing. We all long to be seen and heard, and that's a gift that we often need from each other that, sadly, we sometimes don't give each other. And the story is, very much promotes the idea that that's a gift that we can give each other, is to see and hear each other for who we truly are.
Renee Dunfeld joins us. Her novel is The Enchanted. Now, that's the one thing I wasn't going to give away about the priest and the lady.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
That's okay. It's your book.
I don't say if it's the love story has a happy ending, but yeah, there's a bit of a love story there, and it's an unlikely one. You have to admit.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. And the scenes that you create, like the one that I remember in particular, was she has a lot of access. She's walking around in this labyrinth down in the bowels of this prison where the death row prisoners are. And there's a chamber where, I can't remember what you call the chamber, but it's the place mm-hmm. where they get the lethal injections. It's the execution chamber. And she looks in there and she sees the priest in there. And she goes in and has a little conversation with him. And this is very powerful.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Yeah, they're each, here. I think they're each in this place for these completely, in some ways, different and yet similar reasons. I mean, a lot of people have ended up in this prison because, as you say, they're fallen and they're trying to find a way out. Whether it's the actual prison itself or the prison that they've kind of made for themselves. And they're searching for it in each other. And, in that way, I think the novel, it's certainly not about a death row. It's not just about death row prisoners, and so it examines all those things, but it has far more universal themes that I think really relate to all of us.
Well, I'm grateful. I never would have heard about this book, except that I happened to notice on your publication date a few weeks ago, a friend of mine who I admire greatly, the writer Donald Ray Pollack, put a post mm-hmm. on his Facebook page, and he said, he just raved about this book. He just highly recommended it. And I said, well, if Don likes it, Don, I wouldn't call him stingy about blurbs, but he doesn't give a blurb unless he really means it. And he gave you a very nice blurb. I picked up the book and I read it. And I was so thankful to Don for pointing it out to me. And what a gift.
Oh, yeah, thank you. You know, and I was so honored by that too. You know, like you say, he's a very genuine person. I've never had met him. I'd never spoken with him. You know, this is obviously wasn't one of those kind of situations where I'm going to get blurbs because I'm in the know and people are scratching my back. You know, people that didn't know me from Adam, you know, honored me by reading it. And Donald Pollock, you know, his blurb was just so incredibly flattering. And I did get the chance after he wrote that, I got a contact for him, information for him, so I could thank him. And I did contact him, and I said thank you. And he turned out to be an absolute gentleman, just such a sweet person. So very honored by that.
Renee Denfeld has joined us on the program today. Her new novel is The Enchanted. Okay, so you've never written a novel before. What was the process like for you? You've written nonfiction books. How was this different?
Oh, it was, you know, absolutely, completely different, actually. With nonfiction books, I think there's a lot of skill and craft to it, but it often can kind of feel like you're putting nails in a board. I would structure up the book, and I'd divide it by chapter and figure out what's going to go where, and then just kind of start the process. For this one, it was more a process of kind of getting into the narrator's head. And a lot of my focus actually turned out to be more about getting myself into the right kind of emotional state to let the narrator tell me what was going to happen. Frankly, it was kind of trance-like. People would come into the room and apparently and wave in my face, and I would just be gone into this other world.
Really?
Absolutely, yeah. I just became absolutely just immersed in the voice to the point where it felt often like I was just simply transcribing what he was telling me. And then later I would look at it and I thought I would go, wow, I was pretty amazed at some of the writing that came out of that because I actually couldn't really often consciously really recall it. It was just an absolute joy to be inside the story. I loved being inside that story, and I frankly kind of miss it, and I miss the characters.
Well, there's a trance-like quality to it when we're hearing the narrator describe these images that he conceives of and these sounds and these visions that are recurring throughout the story. There's something very meditative and reflective about it. You've written these other books. I have not read them. What are your nonfiction books about? What were some of the titles?
They're very dissimilar from this. My first book was a critique of modern feminism. I wrote it in my 20s when everybody's convinced they know everything. and it was called The New Victorians. It's sometimes taught in college classes. It's an analysis of modern feminism. The second book was called Kill the Body, which was somewhat similar. It was analysis of female aggression. My third book, I think, kind of marked more of a departure going the direction I am now, and it was a look at a homicide here in our area that involved a large group of street kids. And I spent a lot of time researching street youth for that novel. And that was also at the point I was adopting my kids, and I think I was starting to get definitely a more humanist approach to life at that point. But now I have to say, having written fiction, it's kind of like discovering what you were always meant to do. I just found the process so incredibly satisfying and joyful. I'm hopeful to continue doing this.
Have you been working in Portland for a number of years?
Yeah, I've been here since I was just a tot. Now, of course, I'm settled with the kids and planning to stay. And I'm also planning to continue the death penalty work. In fact, I have two active cases right now because I just really enjoy the work, and I get a lot out of it. For a writer, I'm kind of immersed in hearing other people's stories all the time. You know, people are always honoring me by telling me their secrets. And for a writer to kind of be given the gift of all these people's stories is pretty amazing. I actually was really happy to write the warden character for this novel and have, I think for the first time, I'm aware of a warden who's not a kind of a stereotypical cliched bad guy. Because there are a lot of really good people on all sides of the fence on these issues. And I kind of wanted to be able to show that. You know, it's certainly not meant to be an anti-death penalty book. It's kind of meant to show the humanity of all these people, no matter where they are on the issue.
I think that's so true. And anyone that would presume that as a death penalty investigator that you're trying to preach about the rightness or wrongness of the death penalty would read this book and be surprised, because it's not preachy at all. And the warden is a nice guy.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of people, you know, I've, you know, met quite a few wardens at this point and other correction staff. And, you know, a lot of people that work in prisons are genuinely good people. Oddly enough, they're often the ones who are kind of advocating for better conditions, because the conditions affect, you know, the morale of their staff and what they have to deal with as well. Doing this kind of work and seeing the kind of pain that people can cause each other, you know, I'm not someone who is a big anti-death penalty advocate in that sense. I mean, I can understand why people support it. I've been around the families of victims too much not to. I mean, people have, you know, when people are wild with grief and pain, it's absolutely understandable how they feel that way.
Renee, it has been a real treat to have you on the program.
Oh, well, you know, it's been absolutely my treat and my honor, so thank you. I really enjoy talking to you.
My guest has been Renee Denfeld. Her new novel is The Enchanted, and if I had to pick my favorite book of the year today, it would be this one. So
check
it out. It's quite a piece of writing. For the Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis. I love this book, The Enchanted, by Renee Denfeld. Here's an excerpt. He was not happy to see her. Fortunately, she doesn't care. She had worried the doctor was dead, but no, he is older than Aunt Beth and tottering. He totters into the dark living room with an impatient air. He totters to his liquor cabinet. He totters to get a clean glass, which is really spotted. He totters around his house, which is like a dollhouse for saints. He has a nativity scene on the mantel. The objects people put out for viewing in their homes fascinate her. She has come to believe that the homes of sad or hateful people smell different. When people have sadness or hate inside them, it comes out in a miasma. Dr. Hammond's house smells like a form of slow poison has been hanging in the air for years. She has a sudden conviction that if she lifted all the furniture in his house, she would find layers of squished black bugs underneath. Right away, he says he knows nothing. He remembers nothing. He could guest star on Hogan's Heroes as the bumbling, know-nothing Sergeant Schultz. "I don't know that woman," he says again. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.